So the next talk is by Dr. Muccioli, Atomistic Molecular Dynamic Simulations, Nanobiphenyls, a Test Bench for Liquid Crystal Theories.
Thank you for the introduction. I would like to thank me too, the organizer. This is a nice possibility. And what I'm going to present now is more or less the work on the last 4 years. So it's the work of the last 4 years on five cyanobiphenyls, and I want to present it a little bit in the perspective of a theory that maybe was not our first thought when we started this work. So I will briefly present the technique and then show you three examples. So I will start with the nematic phases of NCBs, and then the smectic phase of HCB, and finally the alignment of solutes in 5CB. So this slide is in more or less every simulation talk. This is just to tell you that you are at the nanoscale, so both the time scales and the length scales are the order of nanoseconds and nanometers. So in atomistic models, each atom is modeled as a sphere. And actually here we are dealing with so-called united atom models in which hydrogens are only implicitly included. So we have spheres only for the heavy atoms. And each sphere interacts with the other through the Lennard-Jones potential, which is tuned by two parameters. One is the contact distance, sigma, and the other is the energy interaction at epsilon. So we have two parameters for each of the atoms in our molecule. And these spheres are kept together by harmonic springs, and more importantly for liquid crystal, there are also anharmonic terms, and these are given by torsion angles. And in our experience, it's very important to reparameterize the force field to describe properly the shape of the molecule through these terms. And finally, the intermolecular energy is described by a sum of the Lennard-Jones potential, which accounts for both for the repulsion and for polarization and polarizability effects. And the charge distribution of the molecule instead is represented by point charges, one on each sphere. And these charges are normally calculated by ab initio calculation. So this is the total force field we have. So this is the first part that gives the shape and the conformation of the molecule, and the second part with the van der Waals and the point charges gives the interaction with the other molecules. So once we have the force field, we can run molecular dynamics or solve the equation of motion. This is just to say that we can control temperature and pressure, and all the simulations I show you are run at ambient pressure. Finally, we use periodic boundary condition, and these conditions are different for Lennard-Jones and charges. For Lennard-Jones, you take only the closest neighbors, while for charges, you assume that the system is infinite. And you do it with this Ewald technique. So let's go to the first example. As you know, cyanobiphenyls are maybe the most ever liquid crystals studied, and they show this very nice alternation of the transition temperature as a function of the number of carbon in the side chain. And they show the nematic phase for the shorter homologs and only smectic phases for the longer homologs. And in this here we study just the the first four member of the series that show nematic phase, so from 5 CB to 8 CB. And the force field, as I told you, is a united atom force field, so no hydrogens. And we have run samples of 250 molecules, and the charges are calculated at this level of theory. And we also fitted the phenyl-phenyl torsion angle with the ab initio data, and this green line here. So in our first attempt with the standard Ember united atom force field, so a force field which is found in the literature, we saw that actually the transition temperature we measured were even 100 Kelvin away from the experimental values, which is something which has been reported also for other force fields, for example, Mark Wilson in recent papers. And this tells us the importance of the force field validation. You cannot use a force field like a black box and think that the results are accurate. And so we decided for an empirical reparametrization, and this empirical method is based on the idea of keeping the point charges which come from the ab initio calculation and varying only the Lennard-Jones parameters. So we iterated this scheme for all the four cyanobiphenyls. So what we found is that if you vary sigma about 0.05 angstrom, you get this variation in the density, and also for epsilon a similar rule of thumb. So we play with this until we obtain the result for us satisfactory for the density and for the transition temperature. So let's start with the density. So here you see a close-up of the experimental densities in continuous lines, and the calculated ones, which are dots. As you can see, the agreement is quite very good in this narrow temperature range. In particular, close to the transition, although the thermal expansion of the system seems not to be reproduced correctly, so the slope of the curves. And for what regards the transition temperatures, also here we have a very good agreement. So the blue line is the blue dots are the experiment, and the red are the simulations. And you see also the odd-even effect is very well reproduced. Also, we run, I will come to this later, we run other simulation with bigger samples, 350 molecules for 8 CB, and we got an even better agreement. But this is also to show or to mention the system size effects. So this is 250 molecules, this is 750, so you can have a variation of a few K. And so how do we find the transition temperature or calculate the other parameter? We need first to find a director. So what we choose normally is the inertia reference frame. So we first diagonalize it to get the shorter, the long axis, looking at the lowest eigenvalue, and then we calculate the order matrix and diagonalize it and find the director. But of course, we know that we can expand once you know the angle between the director and your molecule, so beta here, we can expand the orientational distribution function in a series of Legendre polynomials. But the advantage of the simulations is that you do not need to expand your distribution in a function, an analytical function. We can just take the average over all the molecules of your system and all the configurations of your dynamics. And so let's see what happens when you cool down an isotropic sample. So here we have is 6 CB, and the red one is the order parameter P2, calculated at the simulation where the system is isotropic. So So when we change the temperature here, the blue points, we see that to a temperature 290 K, which corresponds to the nematic phase, we see that the system can self-order to the nematic phase, and it takes about 30 nanoseconds for that. And we end up with a more ordered system. And we did this for all the four homologs and for several temperatures, and monitor the distribution of the order parameter as a function of temperature. So here are isotropic temperatures, here we have nematic temperatures, and as you can see, the distribution of the order parameter changes with temperature from one peak around zero to one peak around 0.5. And this nicely show the occurrence of the isotropic nematic transition, and is very, I mean, this is what you expect, for example, from the Landau-Degen theory, for a system in which the free energy of the isotropic state is very close to the one of the nematic state. Here instead I show two comparisons from 5 CB and 7 CB of the measured and calculated parameter order values. We have P2 second rank and P4 fourth rank. As you can see, for P2 the blue lines are the blue dots are the simulation points. For P2 we have a very good agreement, and for P4 a bit less, at least for 5 CB. Here is very good, but this was published in 2009. Then after, new measurement showed better agreement with P4. So here we have more or less the same value than experiment. So from this observable, it seems that the orientation distribution function is very good, in very good agreement with the experiment. So we can test whether this distribution is in agreement also with some theories. We can compare with the Meyer-Seipel-like theory, so where the free energy is proportional to the the P2 of the molecule. And in that case, Claudio derived many years ago a Taylor expansion, which shows that if the distribution is purely second rank, then P4 is just a function of P2, and where the first term is 5.7P2 squared. And if you plot our P2 values at a different simulated temperature versus the measured P4 value, we see that this is just the first term of this expansion fits very well. So this is an indication that our system follows this empirical law. And we can also compute directly this free energy by inverting our probability distribution function. So we calculate this histogram of the cos beta, and then assuming that is given by the Boltzmann distribution, we can invert it. And then here I fitted these two curves at to different temperature for 5 CB with this equation, and as you see, the fit is almost perfect. So we can say that our distribution, I mean, the mean field is of second rank. We can also think if our system has some degree of molecular biaxiality. So we do not compute not only the beat angle of the molecule between the molecule director, but also this rotation angle. But as you can see here, for 5 CB and 8 CB, the distribution is pretty uniaxial, so gamma is not important. But we run simulation also with more biaxial solutes as probes, and you may notice that in that case the simulation is able also to reproduce the biaxiality of these molecules. So it's a measurable effect. And finally, we can also calculate the molecular shape from the simulation, which is so important in many liquid crystal theories. And we do it calculating these two dimensions from the inertia tensor. And maybe the most important result, which is shown in this slide, is that for thermotropic liquid crystals, the aspect ratio is a function of the temperature. It's not constant like all the theories normally start with. Another thing that we found, I mean, it's a small effect, but we saw it also in other systems, is that at the phase transition, you have a small discontinuity in the aspect ratio. But you may also notice here that the curves for 7CB and 8CB are superimposed, and also the one from 5CB and 6CB. So to understand better these, we looked at the distribution of this aspect ratio for each of these molecules. And you may see that the distribution of odd and even terms are more or less coincident with the same average. So adding an even carbon, you just increase the breadth a little bit, the spread of the distribution, but you don't change the aspect ratio. And so this rationalizes somehow the alternation of the the nematic transition temperature, because as you know, our theory says that the higher the aspect ratio, the higher the stability of the nematic phase. And another thing I thought today, looking at this distribution, is that we heard in the previous talks many times to speak about polydispersity. But also, there was this concept that if you have a molecule, a normal molecule, then you have a monodispersed system. As you can see here, this is not actually not true at all. For example, you see from 8CB, you can have aspect ratio going from 2 to 4. So actually, also these systems are intrinsically polydispersed if you have a flexible chain, at least. So to conclude this, the first part, we quickly, so the nematic phase is well reproduced. The orienting potential is of second rank. The aspect ratio changes with temperature, and the variation of the aspect ratio with odd or even carbons in the alkyl chains can be used to rationalize the odd even effect in transition temperature. So in this second study, instead we looked deeper to the smectic phase of ACB. And so ACB show a smectic phase at 360 K, which becomes nematic at 360 K, and then at 313 it becomes finally isotropic. So this is the classical picture of the smectic phase. Actually, for 5CB, for 8CB, it's a bit more complicated, because each of the smectic layers is formed by two partial layers of a molecule pointing up and down, like here in this cartoon. And the phase is called partial because the spacing is less than two times the molecular length. So you have a partial interdigitation between the molecule up and down. Again, we tested the order parameter, and again, you can see the agreement with the experiment is good. The simulation result are the triangles here. And also the transition temperature is even better than before. And we also assigned the nematic isotropic transition temperature, again looking at the distributions of P2, and as you see here, where we have closest temperature than in the previous example, the transition can be easily located with this method. We can now ask ourselves if the phase is really smectic, and to do this, normally you expand the distribution in a series of cosines which have the period depend in integer periods of the smectic layer spacing, and the most important parameter normally is tau 1, so the average of cosine of 2 pi divided by 2 pi z divided by d, and you expect that your distribution function has a shape like that. However, we have two problems here. The first one is that we don't know the layer spacing, so we cannot just calculate this average for overall the molecules because the spacing is unknown. And the other is that the layers in the simulation box may shift the position during time. So if you neglect this, you may underestimate the parameter and eventually end up with a completely flat distribution. So to avoid this, a possible solution is to evaluate instead of the one particle distribution, the distribution function of the intermolecular distances, which is somehow free from this shift of the layers. And then you obtain a function which depends on the square of the symmetric order parameter. So here you find three of the distribution, one from the isotropic phase, one from the nematic phase, and one from the symmetric phase. And you see that there are nice oscillations, so it's likely that our phase is symmetric. To calculate the order parameter, we fitted this function with this expression, and we obtained the values you see here. So from this value, we can say that the transition temperature occurs between 307 and 311. The experimental value is 306. And also, we can say that there are symmetric fluctuations in the nematic phase. At least this is what we get. And unfortunately, the values are lower than the experimental one. So it's 0.1 or 15 against the experimental value, which are 0.4, 0.7. We can also look whether we have this partial layer and this pictorial representation. This is a sample of 3,000 molecules instead. The molecules pointing up and down are colored in red and blue, and you see that actually we have this partial layer. It's interesting to see also that if you compute the same distribution that I showed before for the only for the molecule up or down, the amplitude of the fluctuation is much higher. But the final order parameter depends on the shift between these two distributions. So if the shift is, so this quantity, if the shift is exactly half of the layer width, then you get finally a flat total distribution. Anyway, we measured the spacing, and also the spacing is in good agreement with the experiments. So in the range of the experimental value of 32 angstrom. Finally, we compare them. Just sketch a comparison with the theory for smectics. So the distribution for smectics must take into account both the orientation and the position of the molecules. And you can have mixed order parameters or simply orientational and positional. For example, this is the distribution we obtained by the sample I showed you before. For P2 versus tau 1. And you see there is a certain spread, but we didn't analyze it so much. We just considered the Macmillan theory, which foresee the energy to be dependent on the P2, on the mixed order parameter, and on the symmetric order parameter, and also the Kvenzel approximation, where it is said that these mixed order parameters is just equal to the product of the purely orientational, purely positional. And we measured this in our simulation, and we saw that actually it is not true, because P2, the product of the two, is only half of the mixed order parameter. So it is likely that the Kvenzel theory will fail in reproducing the feature of this phase of ACB. We did the same for another system, which we found a purely symmetric A phase, and it worked. So it must be a feature typical of the symmetric A partial phase. So concluding the second part, as you see, the symmetric phase is well reproduced, but the order parameter is lower than the experiment. and the partial layers have a higher order parameter than the total one. And finally, the simulation data support the Macmillan theory and not the Kvenzel approximation. How much time do
you have? You have lots of time.
So the third part, and so I can go slowly. The third part is the alignment of the solutes on the 5CB. Actually, these are all the rigid solutes, and we have disc-like solutes and prolate solutes. So the disc-like are quadrupolar solutes, as you can see from the point charges, while for the rod-like, we have two which are strongly dipolar. This is propyne and acetone nitrile. I don't know the English pronunciation, sorry. So as you know, solutes are used both to as a probe for measuring the order of the liquid crystal and as again probes, but to understand the aligning mechanism inside the liquid crystal. So to better explore this aspect, here we run the simulation with the same solute with atomic point charges, but also without, so without dipoles and without quadrupoles, just Lennard-Jones, so shape and polarizability. So first we look at the disruption of the liquid crystal order. Is rather obvious than when you insert a solute in a nematic which has not the proper shape that you may expect some disruption of the order, and this disruption translates in a shift to lowest value of the transition temperature. And this is actually what we get. Here in black, you see the pure 5CB simulation results. And here, you see the points for the solid simulation. And you see that all solids determine a shift of about 5 Kelvin of the of the transition temperature. I forgot to mention that here we're speaking about simulation of about 2,000 molecules of solvent and 100 molecules of solid. And anyway, at these concentrations, you expect experimentally a lower shift. So we can say that this is a bit overestimated. And we can also look at the order parameter of the solids themselves and compare the rod-like with disc-like, and as we wanted, the rod-like have positive order parameter, while the oblate have negative order parameter. So the principal aspect of the molecular shape is predicted by the simulation, let's say. You can also compare what happens when you add or remove the charges, the atomic charges. So here on the left, we have the order parameter of the solutes with atomic charges, and on the right, without. And you can see that the effect is really minor. Removing the charges that determines a small decrease of the order of the solutes. So we can conclude for that the alignment is dominated, let's say, 80%, 90% by shape and van der Waals interactions. To compare with experiments, we need also to calculate NMR observables. This is pretty easy in simulation because if you know these couplings, which are constant of the type of nuclei, then you just have a geometrical expression to evaluate. So we can compute both dipolar couplings and quadrupolar splittings. So in these slides, we compare the quadrupolar splittings for 5CB in the system with different solutes. Here you have the experimental values and here the simulation. And as you can see, the agreement is, the order of magnitude is the same. The agreement says semi-quantitative. And the same for the solutes. Here are the solutes measured at 294 Kelvin. Here you have the simulations, and you see that all the values are the same within the error bar, which is big. And we can also make also an excursus on pentane, because we run simulation also of this molecule. In this case, it's a flexible molecule. And we report again a disruption of the order parameter of the solvent, sorry. And we calculate also the dipolar couplings for all the hydrogen-hydrogen, let's say, distances. And you may see that here MD simulation overestimates the experimental data. An interesting aspect is that we can also compute from the simulation a sort of flexibility parameter. So how much this ratio deviates from the rigid equivalent 1 P2 divided by R to the cube. And you can see that we can then assign some flexibility, but it is also useful to understand why we are far away from the experiment. This is not due to flexibility, because for example here this distance is very quickly varying, but the coupling is quite good. So we may think more that we overestimate the stiffness of pentane. So the simulated spectra is a bit larger than the experimental one. Now we come back to our rigid solutes, and we want to compare to Mayer-Saupe model, at least in this version, in which the order, the energy of the orientation of the solutes is proportional to the P2 of the solvent and to the this function of the beta. And in this case, the hypothesis is that the coupling constant is temperature independent, but depends on the solid. And so we invert our distribution to calculate the free energy, and we fit it by weighting each point of our histogram with the probability of it. So here we have the result for charged and chargeless solids. And as you can see, the error is quite small. These are kilocal per mole. And interestingly, apart the signs, of course, for prolate solute, we obtain values which are more or less the double than for, for disc-like, the double than rod-like. And for when you remove the charges, you get similar values. It's also interesting to see that the biggest differences are for example, for acetone nitrile, where we have a strong dipole. So it makes sense. Okay. And since these are two examples of the fit, so all these curves fit with the same constant multiplied for this function and the order parameter of the solvent. So this model seems to work well, but we must say that at least in this version is a semi-empirical model, because it uses the order parameter of the solvent, which must be measured. Moreover, it does not predict the sign of the coupling. So it cannot say with this model if you have a disc-like or rod-like type of alignment. We also compared with the surface tensor model developed by Alberta Ferrarini and Lacast. So in this model, the interaction depends on a constant, which in turn depends on the temperature, but should be in principle independent of the chemical nature of the solute, and also on a surface integral over the surface of the molecule. So these are the surface integral we calculated. So we calculated these integrals numerically and then fitted with a Legendre polynomial expansion. This is just to show you that in practice we obtain again a potential which depends on only on the second rank, at least for these solids. But once we perform this fit, so as I remember you, it's a global fit over all the solutes. So each temperature is a different fit, but each solute should have the same epsilon, and it is this line here, you see that the standard deviation are very high. So the model seems not to work too well when you include all the solids. Of course, when you fit one by one, you obtain very, very good smooth fit. So this is in our case, at least, this model seems not to work too well in this generalization to all the possible molecular species. On the other hand, we different from the Myers-Haupe, this one can predict the sign of the alignment. It's interesting also to compare charges and without charges. So when you remove the charges, the error, the fit, improve, diminishes. So this makes sense again, because this model is based only on the surface exposed to the solvent. It does not take into account the fact that you have a positive or negative charge region of the surface. So to conclude this part, and then the last part, we have seen that also the solute order on this cyanobiphenyls can be reproduced quite well, that we can compute also NMR observables, and that atomic charges, or let's say the electrostatic part of the intermolecular potentials, seems to be not too important in the alignment of solutes. And for our rigid solutes, the Myers-Haupe model works quite well, while the surface tensor model works well, but is not general for all the solutes. And to conclude my talk, so to resume, I think I showed you that with this simulation we can achieve, if we are lucky, quantitative agreement with experiments. And as a consequence, simulation, differently from experiment, can produce also real distribution. From the experiment you get only an observable, or a moment of the distribution. Here we can have maybe a richer distribution. And I think it can be at least for two variables, it's okay. Three variables, maybe you have to run too long simulation. And we have seen that liquid crystal theories are often based on hypotheses on the distribution, or they predict some types of distribution. So what I suggest is that you should test your theory with an atomistic distribution, and just to see if it works well. And in this talk I only spoke of static properties, but of course you can do the same with the dynamic properties. So finally, I would like to thank the author from Bologna, in particular Mattia, which studied the smectic phase, Antonio for the solutes, and Giustiniano, which derived the force field, of course, Bebo and Claudio. And thank you for your attention.
Well, we certainly have time for questions. Yes, Mike.
I wanted to ask a question about the middle part of your talk on the smectic system. One of the things you emphasized was that your smectic order parameter was significantly lower than the one measured in experiment. And now you were comparing, I think, with the small angle neutron scattering experiments of Rob Richardson's group. Mm-hmm. So having had a look at their paper, it looks as though to get that parameter, they made one or two assumptions about the molecular ordering in the layers. For example, they estimated the molecular form factor, and then they had to also estimate the relative positions of the two oriented liquid crystals within the layers and so on. And I wondered if you'd looked into that and possibly just gone the other way and predicted the neutron scattering results from your simulations. Just in case the experiments were wrong and the simulations were right.
Well, and Claudio thinks that the experiments are wrong. So that's the short story. So the long story is that So first, we didn't calculate the scattering from the experiment, but I think there's a problem of. Okay, I don't need the. No, I want to show you. I think there are two possibilities. One is that the experiments are wrong. Claudio thinks it is related to the fact that it is a mixed order parameter plays a role. Maybe, I don't know if you are going to talk about that.
No, not necessarily.
In any case, I don't know that. So there could be that, we think, let's say, that the intensity of this peak has a partial contribution coming from the fact that you have this positional orientation of the parameter, which is big. And the second one that I thought looking here is that we may miss a little bit the value of this lambda. And so in practice, we measure a smaller order parameter. Or maybe the two can be.
I can complement since you called me. There are two experiments, or three. One is Newton scattering, Ledbetter first, and then Bob Richardson more recently. The experiment of Bob Richardson actually aims at determining the absolute value, while the experiment in itself does not give you the absolute value of the order parameter, but basically a scaling factor times. The second type of experiment is X-ray, and there is one relatively recently by Kaupernaum and Gieselman. In both experiments, in the X-ray in particular, for clear, the order parameter, the position of the parameter is got from the position of the first reflection, right? Just the first reflection. And that, if you do some analysis, is not it is connected to the order parameter, but to get the order parameter out, you have to assume that, again, you don't have the mixed order parameter, which we know is important now, and also that you have a scaling factor. Gieselman obtains the scaling factor by a kind of Haller approximation, by extrapolating to down to zero temperature and assuming that at zero temperature the order is complete. But the point is that the conformation of the molecule changes with temperature. So that again. So we have a greatest respect for experiment, for sure. And the experiment, I'm sure, is correct. The point is that the interpretation is not as univocal as for NMR. For NMR, there is no doubt. Experiment are experiments, and results are easy. But this is a combination of factors.
I didn't answer to part of your question. Yes, I went through the paper. And the approximations to me were quite reasonable. I mean, the geometry they choose, and also they were not enough to explain. I mean, the variation on tau by varying the geometry of the dimer were not enough to explain the difference.
Yeah,
yeah.
Bishop.
Yeah, just maybe to add to Claudio's comment, because I was involved in some communication with experimentalists about that. Because when we say that this is the result of the experiment, we assume that the experiment is direct. But in this case, all experiments are based basically on the works of Ledbetter, which are well known. But if you look into them, I mean, he derives simple expressions, which are then used by experimentalists, using approximations. And very often, he doesn't explicitly discuss them. So there is a review of him available, so everybody can have a look there. So there are uncontrolled approximations, and we still do not know when they work and when they do not. So Claudio mentioned a couple of cases. For example, none of the existing techniques may distinguish between mixed and pure translational order parameter. But there are other approximations as well. That's the only thing.
Maybe we're wrong.
Did you try substances with re-entrant pneumatic?
No, we didn't. I mean, it's an old idea, I would say, yeah. To try them.
Because that would be a challenge, to get the re-entrant pneumatic, for instance.
Yeah, from even the transition temperature is quite a reasonable challenge. But you're right. We thought of doing one of these.
Yes, one more question.
Yeah. What about the order of the pneumatic to smectic transition? Is it the first?
No, I didn't say that. I mean,
we have huge fluctuation on this metric order parameter, but it seems continuous, so second order, purely second order, for what we see. I didn't plot the values because they were quite ugly plot. So. But it's here, you see, it's just decreasingly with some fluctuation.
I have a quick question. If you go to the next slide, you mentioned you had 750 molecules, but a quick count suggests more.
No, go back to... So we tested to be sure our method for the order, the semantic order parameter, we ran simulation also on samples of 3,000 molecules, which is the one is shown here.
Well, there are no more questions. Let's thank the speaker.